world's knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 625. Jason Lindgren is with me, and Derek Condit, also known as the Bee Whisperer, returns. Over the past month or so, a critical thing has happened in terms of bee die-off. I saw it starting to be reported, so I called Derek, and he said, it's true. This is going on, and this is the kind of thing that can have massive effects with regard to food production, and not just food production, the healthiest foods we have access to. So I'm going to say a couple things before we jump in here. First, if you don't know anything about bees, learn about bees. They're a big deal. They're also, we'll probably talk about this, they're connected to higher spiritual planes. They also see parts of the electromagnetic spectrum that we cannot. There's a man named Martin Dorn, M-A-R-T-I-N, Martin Dorn, D-O-H-R-N, was in his home during COVID, went in the backyard, started filming. You should go see this work he did so that you know something about bees. The film he made is My Garden of 1,000 Bees. Lastly, please don't be one of these blind melons that goes out into your yard and notices that there's a big wad of bees that have temporarily parked, and kill them or spray them with the hose or do something bad to them. You should treat them with respect. As a matter of fact, you should think of bees as miniature angels connected to a higher plane that have everything to do with food production, or at least a very big part of it. If the bees come to your yard, they're there temporarily most times. And if they have to be moved, you can get on places like Craigslist, and almost all the time, someone will come out for free. But if you have to call someone, be certain that they are not going to destroy the bees. Ask up front, if you come get the bees, will they be alive and replaced somewhere where they can live? Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a fine and wonderful good morning.
All right. Are you ready to jump in?
I'm just going to say that this is one of the most important subjects we could possibly be going over, because bees are essential to life.
This is a big deal, and I'm going to say a thing, and I'm going to say a thing that maybe a lot of people don't agree with, but I don't care. Bees are highly sensitive to aluminum. They're spraying aluminum in our sky all over the world. Bees are highly sensitive to EMF at certain frequencies. Does anyone need to be told what's going on with EMFs? It is my point of view that somewhere in this world, someone is very well aware of what they're doing, and this is part of the effort to try to get those spiritually minded folks who do not want to submit to the digital man-made world to lose their ability to get good, healthy food out in the world and have to subscribe to the man-made system that seeks to control us all. But having said that, welcome, Derek.
Thank you very much, Grown Jason. I appreciate you having me on. You're right. This is a very important topic.
It's a big, big deal. And I mean, just for the sake of it, go ahead and lay down how serious it is, what's gone on in the past month or so.
Yeah. That's kind of a scary topic. And I'll go through some of the numbers here, just so you have an idea. And I have a lot of connections, so the listeners realize where I'm kind of getting my information from as well, because I have contacts in some of the largest collections of bees, which are in Southern California in the almond fields. So that's where a lot of these reports are coming from, because there's tens of thousands of hives that are called overwintered there from other states. So typically an apiary or a beekeeper that has an apiary where their bees are, we'll call it, have 40 to 50% losses a year. And that's throughout the entire year for various reasons. What's happened these last few months on top of those up to 50% losses have been, depending on the size of beekeeper you are, meaning a hobbyist, which would be 1 to 50 colonies, or a sideliner, which is a couple hundred, but the commercial colony beekeepers have tens of thousands of colonies, and they're reporting up to 60%+ losses in the last couple months, in addition to the 40 to 50% they lose every year from various things. So when that's compounded, the numbers just extrapolate crazy, and they're just left with literally, in this case, they're trying to do the numbers, but it's millions of beehives right now that are just left dead. And then they've got to try and recoup from those losses. So just really in short, it's basically, again, 62%-ish on top of the average 50%.
So did these folks have an idea of what's causing it?
Pretty much what's being put out there is the same story of, and they all have an effect, from fungicides to herbicides, insecticides, and that includes things like pesticides. So glyphosate for weed reduction and things like that, believe it or not, is still being used. They're talking about basically that is because they don't have, when you really zoom out, there's not an exact thing they can put their finger on for colony collapse disorder because it's really vague because so many aspects of our reality affect the bees because they are so energy sensitive. So yeah, there's really a lot of contributing factors, but that's not to put fear or anything like that because we can get into it when you're ready, but there's lots of things we can do to help the bees and save them, which is what I'm all about with Shungite beehives being chemical free and treatment free. So there are avenues we can take.
So I was about to jump in that direction. The last time we had you on, or maybe it was the time before, I don't remember which, you talked about having gone at colony collapse disorder, commonly called CCD, where the bees are dying en masse, and you found an effective strategy to start to combat this, and you just mentioned it in the type of hives you make. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Sure. And I tend to go pretty quickly, so of course, slow me down if you want me to elaborate on something. But in essence, what you do is, again, I mentioned no chemicals in the beehive, so you want to be organic or treatment-free, but there's a mineral called shungite. If your listeners aren't aware of it, it's a rock from Russia that has unique aspects to it. It actually has an effect in various ways, and I'll get into that, on our electromagnetic spectrum, frequencies and energies in our environment. So in short, what I do is take this rock called shungite in powder form, blend it into the exterior paint of the beehive, and paint it. And basically, that's called a Faraday cage. So when you've encompassed or encapsulated either a beehive or electronic equipment, in the case of our military and governments, those are Faraday cages. And it stops a lot of the harmful frequencies from really affecting the bees while they're inside of the hive, which is, of course, where the brood is. And then I'll place three shungite nuggets at the entrance of the hive, and the bees, and I have video of all of this, as they come and go from the hive, us humans know it as earthing or grounding. We remove excess energy or frequencies, lots of ways of saying it, and the bees do the same thing. So after painting the beehive with shungite paint, adding shungite nuggets to the entrance, and then there are a couple other internal things that I do, such as spraying the interior walls of the boxes with colloidal silver. Colloidal silver inhibits bacteria, viruses, fungus, all the harmful stuff to bees. And there's lots of viruses that affect bees. And that colloidal silver will help, you know, keep those levels down or non-existent because beehives are wood and there's moisture inside of the hive, of course. And that's usually a major common problem with beehives is affecting that moisture. Colloidal silver does take care of that fungus and moisture that's in there or the fungus that grows in the moisture.
So most people who want to get involved are probably not going to start setting up hives because there's a cost with that. But for people who are listening who have hives, where would they go to get the shungite? And I'm guessing you don't just grab any old paint. You want to make sure that that's not chemical-ridden paint. So how do you do it? Where do you get it?
Yeah, and if you're talking about, so it is cost prohibitive to start a beehive and not everybody can do that. So there are sponsorship avenues out there and things. But as far as you're talking with the paint, you do want to get, if you're starting your own beehive or know somebody that is, you want to have exterior paint and low VOC. So you don't want the volatile organic compounds, the off-gassing of paint on the beehive. So think of it like this. If you're in the summer days of wherever somebody might be with their beehives and it gets warm, when the paint, even if it's shungite paint, if you don't use low VOC, it'll what's called off-gas or there'll be some sort of fumes. So that's an important aspect to think of. And then as far as the powder, I'll give a quick idea of how much it would take. It's just a couple tablespoons of the fine shungite powder, and we blend silver particles in the powder as well. That goes into a gallon of paint that you would paint the beehive with. And we've actually been gifting the amount you need for one full shungite beehive at our website since 2016.
By the way, this technique isn't just for beehives. A person could do this also to help protect their home.
Oh, absolutely. So that whole Faraday cage aspect I was talking about, we have right here behind my office is another room called a shungite room. And that's painted. The walls are painted with shungite paint. And it's, you know, in short, you can think of it as a healing energy room. And those are available in Europe. I built one here. And it's a phenomenal space to walk into. There's even somebody, so let's say a customer in my store here, that aren't necessarily into energies or the metaphysical aspects, we'll just word it like that. You know, the ones that come in kind of questioning stuff, well, they walk into that shungite room and you'll see their eyes widen. Sometimes their jaw opens. Oh my gosh, I feel that. And it's a pretty unique experience to watch.
So just so folks know, on the sponsored link on my website, up top on the main menu, on the second row, fourth from the left is Mystical Wares. That's Derek Condit, the Bee Guy, is the label on it. That's where you can get gifted the powdered shungite if you want to protect hives that you already have. I think you also have shungite available that people can get there, right?
Yeah, and there's been a lot of studies on that to where, so we have shungite available in jewelry form, in say a palm stone, lots of ways and shapes. And it has actually been scientifically proven that if a person has shungite on their person, it can not only reverse, but overcompensate the harmful physiological effects we experience from cell phones being put against our heads.
Right, which I never do. I will also mention on the sponsored page, second row from the bottom all the way right is Conscious Tech. Every day I wear a shungite disc around my neck with sacred geometry. I've been doing this for years. I also have a big chunk of shungite that Derek gave me, and I keep it in my drinking water glass. It's a big deal and people should be aware of it. You can look into it. But Jason, did you want to jump in here?
So I just want to get across that this doesn't just affect the bees, it affects everything, but affecting the bees is a very, very bad thing, which will in turn hurt everything. So the things we're talking about can certainly help protect you as well as the bees, because these electromagnetic waves that we're getting bombarded with all the time are just going to keep increasing as the technology keeps increasing.
I think there's a spiritual element to being in tune with the bees in your garden and things like that. But Derek, there's a lot of beehives and there's a lot of practices that are commonly used. Are there common beekeeping practices that you don't think are very helpful?
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, there are, and some of them affect the colony themselves. And then a lot of them really affect the honey. And that's the reason a lot of people get into beekeeping is, and they don't think of it just as they're pollinating, helping us provide food and fruit trees and all of that. They think of it from the honey aspect. And when they're doing that, often commercial beekeepers will usually, and sometimes many private ones, there's various, I have to talk about pests for a moment because this matters. There's a pest or a mite, a varroa mite it's called, little tiny mite that does get onto bees and affect them and harms them in a lot of ways. So, and I'm just kind of skipping past it real quickly because for this mite issue that has played a huge role of colony collapse disorder, not just in the US, but worldwide, often they'll put little acid strips, acylic acid strips. So a piece of paper that's been coated in a type of acid that will off gas. So what they'll do, and I'll give you a visualization, a beekeeper, if they find out their hive and they don't know of other ways to help this issue, and I'll share some of those, what they'll often do and what is actually taught is to buy these little strips of acid paper, open them up, and of course, there's warnings all over them. Don't breathe these things. Don't touch them. They're talking about for the humans, which it does the same thing to anything, including the bees. So they'll lay these pieces of paper on top of what's called the frames of honey or brood inside of the beehive, close up the hive. Think of it like a bug bomb, I think they used to be called, where your house is infested with fleas or whatnot, and you'd pop the bug bomb and everybody leave the house and get out of there because you're spraying poison everywhere. That's a thing. And that's in essence what's happening when they're doing these treatments on beehives, although the bees aren't getting out of there. There's no telling them to leave for a few hours and come back. And the brood or the baby bees and the open cells of honey that are in there are all being, I'll go with the term I used, bug bombed or fumigated. So when I was talking about honey, think of it like this. If you had your refrigerator at home full of jars of honey, and you opened all the lids, and you threw a bug bomb in there, let it off, and then waited some time, and then you go back and just seal the lids of the honey. I mean, that just doesn't make logical sense to me, but that's in essence what's happening on those open cells of honey and brood. So yeah, the little nursery, I mean, the open cells or jars of honey are all being contaminated with this, and then that honey's being extracted, thrown in little plastic bears, and sold on shelves. So yeah, when you talk about things that are being done to beehives, that's a massive one, the chemical treatments for various issues.
How would you deal with it if you went out and saw there were mites in one of your hives to avoid doing what you just described?
Yeah, and I'll tell you the truth is you're not going to avoid mites on your hive. It's a thing, but it's not a colony collapse thing as long as the bees are healthy enough to deal with it themselves. So I would put a screened bottom board on my beehive to start with. So just think the floor of the beehive, small enough holes in it. So if the mites get pulled off or fall off a bee, they fall down to a lower section where they can, and sometimes are these bottom boards, kind of think a basement in a house, are treated with glues or things like that. So the mites can't then get back off of it like a fly tape, but natural substances. So that's what you would start with. So the mites that are removed, fall down, don't get back on, but you definitely don't treat the bees chemically because that weakens their immune systems, lowers their energy, everything that happens to us. So then it just exacerbates the problem. Next, I would do, and on my beehives, I would already be doing it. I would have been treating the beehive, again, as I mentioned, colloidal silver, because that'll also boost the bee's immune system. So the mites don't have such an effect. I would use mushrooms. And I started that in 2006 with turkey tail mushrooms I would harvest from the mountains myself. I did some research, saw that they were recommended for lots of reasons, immune boosting, antimicrobial, believe it or not, those even cure different forms of cancer. So I thought, well, let's dry them out and use them. So I started doing that rather than, so what I'm saying is for people that don't know beekeeping, there's a smoker device that you would use. And often it's when you're opening a hive to inspect them or you're extracting honey or whatever you're trying to do, you would get this smoker device, put some, this will actually expand on your question, Crow, because the other thing that sometimes beekeepers do, actually most of them, is on the smoker device, they'll put newspaper in there or cardboard. Well, there's toxic inks and glues in both those things. And when you light them on fire and then kind of snuff them out, so this little device in your hand just emits smoke, well, all those particles are in there. And that's harmful for not just the bees, but the beekeeper. So I'll use the dried mushrooms in there as a smoker material. And why you would use a smoker is if, again, you're going to inspect or there's lots of reasons you'd open the hive, but you'd emit a little smoke around there. The bees basically think, oh, there's a forest fire. And they just start double timing, eating the honey. And the honey doesn't go anywhere because once you leave and stop smoking the hive, they put it right back in the cells. So in essence, you're just keeping the bees busy while you're doing what you need to do in there, but you don't need to chemically harm them while you're doing that with inks and glues and things. So the answer would be use mushrooms. And there's one that University of Washington done some research on. It's called, I think I'm pronouncing it right, but Amadou. So Amadou mushroom. And you can use these mushrooms as extracts. If you need to feed the bees supplemental food, you can put liquid form in a natural sugared water. You don't buy an artificial sugar or things like that and feed it to the bees. But you put the mushroom extract in there, feed it to them, and that will literally cure what's called deformed wing virus, where in essence, the bees start coming out because of an excess virus load while they're incubating in there, in essence, in their cells or the brooding. They come out with deformed wings and they can't fly. And you can visually see that. They're kind of like dried up little wings. And that's an issue as well, because then those bees can't pollinate and harvest.
I've actually heard, and I want to ask you if this is true, I have heard that if the beekeeper has a sufficiently good relationship with the hive, he doesn't need to use smoke. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, there's absolute truth. I don't use smoke or soot. Now, here's the caveat. I'll be starting, as I mentioned before the show to Jason, I'll be starting the two new Shanghai beehives for this season, but they're called nooks, excuse me, or baby hives. I'm starting from a commercial beekeeper. My point is I want to go through the whole process of converting those two, think half-size beehives, into full chemical-free hives. And doing that, they're really agitated. So tonight, I'm going to absolutely have a suit on and probably a smoker, because these bees I'm working with, again, have been chemically treated. They're in a harmful environment. They're fed not natural foods. So they're upset. But once you convert those bees into Shanghai beehives, no, there's no suits needed, no smoking. I go out there and work with the bees. They're walking all over you. Bees don't want to sting people. They'll die if they sting you. That's the thing. Their stinger comes out and they know that. They'll only sting if they feel in danger or, you know, you step on them or bump into something like that, or you're blocking their hive. They're not wanting to sting. And that ties back to your comment at the beginning about leave the bees alone in your yard. They're maybe taking a bee break right there, because they go up to 7 miles for a drink of water. That's what bees will do. So it'd be beneficial to put a bird or bee bath in your environment. So I'll kind of say yes, Crow, that some of us don't need suits. But the other part is you have to be in the right state or space. And that just means go out there and just know you're part of them. Just be open. You know, your feeling matters and the bees pick up on that.
So, Jason, do you guys use honey in your home?
We do use it a little bit, but not a ton.
Yeah, we use it. We go through so much honey here. But what I was going to ask you, is the cost of honey off the charts down in Louisiana like it is here?
No, it's not too bad. Actually, a lot of people make it here, but most of the honey that we have been using is from David Avocado Wolf that he gifted us.
Ah, that's a plus. I buy a lot of honey and there's a lot of apiaries around here, so you don't get that little cheesy plastic runny honey bear. You get the crystallized, but Derek, let's talk about that for a minute. What is the difference between organic honey and honey? And also, is there a difference you can explain between going and getting one of those little plastic bear bottles with runny honey in it or buying a jar where it's firm or crystallized looking?
Oh, there is. And depending on where you get your honey. So even if you just buy honey locally, you'd want to, hopefully if you have the chance, check with the beekeeper and make sure they're not artificially feeding the bees. Or basically, and many of them are, they're given artificial sugars, high fructose corn syrups, things like that. Pouring it in a bee feeder, it's called, and the bees go in there, bring it inside, ingest it, mix it, and turn it into honey, with air quotes here, and put it in the cell, the honey cell, and then that's what we're extracting and eating. So really, a lot of these, even if they're local honey, it's artificial feeding. So really, it's not natural honey anyway. And I know there's no exact way to know that unless you can find somebody that's, again, an organic and or treatment-free beekeeper. But then it's a whole other aspect as far as the feeding, because if you supplement bees, it matters what they eat because they're turning that into honey. And then, of course, honey is the one substance on the planet that we can consume and live off of without drinking water, without eating anything else. You know, it'd probably get a little overwhelming that much, but it can be done. So it's very important energetically. And that ties into what you're talking about with the plastic bears on the shelves. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast. If we talk about the microplastics that are being pulled into the honey, and that's a thing, what we jar our honey in is just that, a glass jar, and not just a glass jar, it's hexagon shaped. So think a geometry of the universe. It's a way, I'll just say, energies cohesively move. It's not random that honeybees put their honey and brood in hexagon shaped cells. There's a reason for that. And hence we take that same logic into our storage of the honey. Maintain it in glass so that there's no particles going in there, and then that shape. And then often ours will put the what's called shungite water beads in there as well to keep it energetically structured. But yeah, it's a big difference on how you store your honey. And also when it's harvested, how it's harvested. And this goes back to a study someone named Dr. Emoto did with water. Not just water is programmable, so is honey. So it matters the state of energy or being when that honey's extracted and how it's worked. That makes a difference too.
Well, the stuff in the little plastic bears is typically way too runny. And when it's been processed to that degree, I mean, you're losing some of the benefits, aren't you?
Oh, you're losing them all because they boil it. So it's actually boiled down to, and it kills all the bacteria, the enzymes, all the good stuff in there that makes it one of the best antibiotics on the planet, topically and internally. So yeah, if you're getting pasteurized honey, it's called, typically it'll never crystallize again. It'll be really runny, like you're saying, like syrup. If you have a honey jar or a container of some kind, that honey should be really slow moving, like really slow. It shouldn't be just coming out. You shouldn't think of it as liquid. Yeah, so I mean, if it does look that way and feel it, then you probably have a percentage artificial honey, or the beekeeper, again, fed the bees high fructose corn syrups or fake sugar mixed in water. And they just turn that into honey.
I don't know how many people listening have done what I've done. I know Jason's done, a lot of people I know. They have 2 years of food set by just in case something goes down. It's typically the freeze-dried stuff you see, but I don't think many people think about honey. I always have 4 or 5 big jars of the non-viscous honey. And just so you know, the shelf life is longer than I'll be alive. As a matter of fact, probably longer than my kids' kids' kids will be alive. I mean, they found honey that's so old and it's still honey. In a way, in the same way gold is at the top of what it represents in alchemical philosophy, honey is that of the food. It would represent that slot, the highest. It doesn't really go bad. As Derek said, you can live on it. My point being is if you've set aside food be a good idea to get a nice couple big jars of honey to go with your not so great freeze-dried food.
That's a fantastic idea. As we already mentioned, it's not just food, it's medicinal. So as long as you have the right honey, I mean, you've now gone antibiotic, a prebiotic, a probiotic, all sorts of things.
I think I read somewhere that they used to way back treat burns with honey and the healing rate was incredible.
Unfortunately, I need to admit a couple things because I move so fast in my day-to-day life, I'll get burned if I'm doing this, that, or the other because I have different torches and things. I've done that dozens of times. And then honey on there, and luckily I have a lot of honey around, so I'm on it pretty quickly. So that's what some of you want to do is either, if you don't have honey, get it under cold water or burn quickly, and you'll kind of limit the effect it has on you. But honey will literally neutralize it and reverse it all to where there's almost nothing at all. Get it quicker, the better. But that's absolutely a thing that I've experienced with.
So while we're still in hour one, I want to talk about the mason bees or the so-called carpenter bees. People will recognize them in most places. They might be black. They're the ones that carve little holes up in the eaves of your home, perfectly round. It looks like they use a compass. Maybe that's why they call them mason bees, because they build in that way. But I'm going to be installing some little bamboo things that I get at my local garden shop for them. Can you talk about the mason bees, about how good they are at pollinating and about how easy it is to provide a space for them?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought those up, because mason bees or carpenter bees are found in every single state, and they're natural. And for those that don't know, if you go to maybe your farm stores or other stores, you'll see a, looks like a birdhouse with a bunch of little bamboo shoots in it or tubes. And that's what Crow's talking about. Those are the tubes that, you know, if you provide it, they won't drill holes in the eaves of your house. They'll go in there, and then a little input on that, Crow, what they do, why they're called mason or carpenter bees, they'll go to the, all the way the furthest inside of this little tube or bamboo shoot, and they'll lay an egg, and then they'll mason a little wall out of pollen and different things in there and seal off that egg. And then they'll continue to make little chambers or baby brood rooms throughout that tube until it gets to the end. Then they'll seal it off. And then one by one, as those eggs hatch in the spring, they'll chew their way out, get in their first meal from the wall that was masoned up there, and then emerge. And a little more input on the bees, mason and carpenter bees pollinate over 300 times better than honeybees. That's crazy. It's such huge numbers that they're worth having around. And then they are also stingless. So if somebody was in wanting to help us all in the environment by helping with bees, you don't have to have honeybees. You can start your own mason or carpenter beehive and or buy one and just hang it up on the back fence of your house. As I mentioned, they're stingless. You don't have to worry about that. And they don't produce honey, so you don't have to worry about managing or working a beehive. And again, they'll pollinate locally and just really blossom the environment.
And by the way, if you're a person that lives in a place where they're constantly cutting those perfectly round holes in your eave, you have two reasons to do it. Because if you provide the habitat, they won't do that. But it's incredible. I have like a wooden bulkhead that goes down to my basement, and there's a pretty thick, big beam, like a 4x4 or something. And underneath, I hadn't noticed it for a long time till my dog got onto it one day, and then I noticed it. The hole is so perfectly round, it's almost impossible to believe a bee carved it out, but it was like 3 inches deep, and it looked like it was bored out with an auger. I mean, it was perfect. Incredible to see.
Yeah, it is. They're really neat to see, and they'll go even deeper than that. They'll spin in circles when they're doing it, so that's why it just kind of centrifugally gets made that way. It's pretty phenomenal, and they'll go, yeah, unfortunately, pretty deep.
You know, we didn't really talk about what shungite is and where it comes from. Maybe we should back up for a minute to do that, just in case anyone's hearing about all of this for the first time.
Good idea. It only comes from one place in the world, right, Derek?
Yeah, it does. And that's Karelia, Russia. There have been some artificial versions, like many rocks and minerals that are sold. There's artificial versions of it, and it can be tested, because it's the only known mineral without refinement that will conduct electricity. So if you have a true piece of shungite from Karelia, Russia, and you have your cell phone open, make sure it's not sharp, you don't scratch your phone, but you can actually tap on the apps, swipe the screen over, stuff like that, and there's a flashlight test. But it is a carbon-based mineral from Karelia, Russia, and the whole magic behind it, and it's all science really, is called a fullerene or carbon-60 molecule, or a buckyball. And that's a little soccer-shaped molecule that has an effect on energies and frequencies, which is why it has that Faraday cage effect, you know, in essence, blocking frequencies. but it's mined. I'm trying to think about it. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's a large deposit, but it is just in the one spot in Russia. And for those that aren't familiar, it's completely black. It looks like coal. It's completely different, but it is carbon-based.
How cost-effective is it? Like, if someone wanted to go get some chunks to put it in their water or do other things, is it affordable for most people?
It's very affordable. And I want to mention, because there's a lot of add-ons to that, so I have an FAQ section on shungite that gets more into it. But you do want to be aware of a few things before using shungite in your water. You want to inspect it for pyrite, inclusions, things like that. But it's very affordable. I mean, you can get, if you're just talking plain shungite, and type two, which would be the black shungite, not the shinier, elite, or noble, which is not good for your water. But if you get the type two, yeah, it's relatively inexpensive, a few dollars. And it lasts a lifetime. It's not like it's a carbon filter with a bunch of little pores in it where it's grabbing the stuff out of your water. No, it's energetically affecting the water. And what it's shown is when you add shungite nuggets to your water, things like glyphosate that are in our water molecularly become non-coherent. They fall apart. So it's not grabbing the parts and pieces. It's breaking it into its constituents. Kind of like if you, let's say you have a sandwich that's made of this, that, and the other ingredients that aren't necessarily bad, but when put together, they're not good. Well, but when you take it apart, well, then you have your bread, your and whatever's in there. So it's different. And that's how shungite affects the harmful, I mean, just toxins, free radicals in the water. It affects lots of particles that are in there.
And what else can shungite be used for? We went through a couple of things, but can you go into some more?
Well, in my realm here where I spend day to day, it's mostly used. Yes, it's used in water and on beehives, but it's used for individuals for, again, these things are worded different ways, but for upgrading, becoming more aware. It helps people that are energy sensitive, that are sometimes they're called empaths or empathic. And that's kind of a loose term. But when you have shungite around you, and it helps your energy field or aura or biofield, it's called, to become more cohesive, more aligned, you can say, so you're not so responsive to other things in our environment. Sometimes we call those things stresses, anxieties. They're all frequencies. And shungite helps even all those things out. So that's another use for it.
Do you use type 2 shungite on the beehives or any shungite?
I would use type 2. So there's the three types. I can go over quickly. There's the elite or noble, which would be type 1, which is the shiny stuff, but it breaks apart really easily. So that's why you wouldn't want it in your water. And it's very expensive. So type 2, which is the darker shungite, and then type 3, which is a lighter one, which is kind of a grayish. You know, you can use that in gardens or something or construction. But type 2, and it's relatively inexpensive, and it has enough of the fullerene or carbon-60 molecule in there to have an effect.
Now, the way you talk about shungite, does the mainstream have any agreement with you on that, or do they just poo-poo everything to do with it?
I don't know if you mean mainstream as far as other people that work with shungite, or, I mean, really, it depends on who we're talking about, because if they get behind the science, and I've republished at least 90 studies, not scientific studies, I did myself and calling them that, these are legit studies showing shungite having an effect on all sorts of things. Again, living creatures, they fed shungite powder to rats and tripled their lifespan. And then we've got the studies with bees, like I'm mentioning here, that are also being done at a local college. But it depends on the person's understanding. If they walk in, oh, magic black rock, sure, that's going to help. Well, you know, then it's just a limited perspective. So it kind of depends who I'm talking to.
Now, the study you're referring to is people doing studies on C60 and using it for life extension. Do you know anything else about that?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of studies, and I actually recently, within the last couple months, and it's on YouTube somewhere, released a video talking about one of the documented studies. And I'll move through it kind of quickly, but pause me if you need me to. But the study consisted of individuals that would take a cell phone, start a call, so not just a disconnected cell phone, and put it up against their ear for a specified amount of time. And then they did different measurements on the person, namely on their eardrum. And so the vagus nerve, and I don't get too much in this, is behind your ear loosely inside of your head. And they were wondering how much that's affected by those high frequencies up around our heads. So they measured again, they measured the beats of our heart. And then there's a way, I won't get too much into the science here, but there's a certain rhythm it needs to maintain. They know you're affected, the heating up of your eardrum. So there's different aspects that were measured. And it was literally shown when they put a pendant on the person or a shungite sticker on their phone, or they also used shoe inserts. And when they did that, the individuals not only recovered faster from the harmful effects of shungite, but they overcompensated. And again, this is a whole study that can be read more, but in essence, it literally showed when you introduce shungite to that harmful frequency or energy environment, not just humans, but that was what the study was done, the humans will, oh, and this is their words in the study, overcompensate and heal from that. It's kind of like if we lift a heavy object enough times, well, what do our muscles do? They get stronger, they get bigger, kind of the same thing. So that's a study that had been done showing the benefits of shungite.
You know, I still have the, what was this, like 3 years or more ago now, I still have that sticker on the back of my phone, still holding up after all this time.
Of course, yeah, and they don't go bad. That's the beauty of shungite too, or, you know, or a rock or crystal. They last basically forever because it's a frequency thing. It's think of the etheric filter rather than a physical one. So they last.
So it kind of feels like we're going through an era shift here. We talk about it a lot. Do you notice a difference in the way the bees are acting with regard to maybe like the solar cycle, sunspots, you know, when they claim there's X-class flares, this kind of thing?
That's absolute. And I had no, so I'll kind of back up. When I first got into beekeeping and started working with the bees and then realizing, well, there's a solar flare happening here, or the Schumann frequency is doing this, or 100% the bees would respond, so much so they would be my trigger that, oh, I better go see what's going on. Is something happening up in the skies or energy wise? Because they would respond such that I knew something was happening. It varies on be it the time of year or an eclipse, but often let's go with that. The colonies would get heightened during an eclipse. So a solar eclipse, they would get just really heightened and then just really active. I'll put it that way. They're out doing stuff. It's almost like they don't know, and with no kind of goal. They're just, I would look at it and think they're swarming, but they weren't. They were just heightened or charged. And I couldn't explain it more than that, other than just what I saw. But it was definitely would correlate to what was going on. And this was over years of watching them.
Did they go inside during the actual eclipse or did they stay out in the world?
They came, well, no, inside. And I actually have video of this somewhere. They would go inside. So it'd be kind of before and after. During the eclipse, they would go inside. And then before and after as it would change. So, and I don't have an exact time frame because it was timing it, but then they would get heightened. So I was really noticing just big differences. Again, worried that they were going to swarm. And then all of a sudden, silence.
I almost wonder if the indigenous peoples in this country got that from the bees, because in their teachings, you don't eat. It's a couple hours before an eclipse. You stay inside with the windows closed and the curtains drawn during the eclipse. And then you don't eat for some period of time after the eclipse. And then as I started looking, there's a number of places that have this kind of teaching. And that's why I asked, because I'm wondering if they observed it in the bees.
I didn't know anything about that. So as far as whether they're eating inside or not, I wouldn't really know that, of course. But as far as responding, definitely. Yeah. And they hunker down during those things.
Now, is there any noticeable differences in bees' attitudes or actions that seem to go with the solar cycles?
Definitely on that. Any cycles out here, I mean, of course, I think you guys already know that, absolutely have an effect on bees because they're so energy sensitive. They respond to it, they feel it, and then even as far as the year goes, and they'll say that that's some of the issue with colony collapse disorder, and they'll tie it into, oh, environmental changes, the warming of the climate, and the numbers. Again, that's a huge conversation. But yes, some of that's attributed to the different solar cycles and their activity. And because things are, and I think it is a percentage accurate, because as our environment changes for whatever reason, heating up, cooling off, you know, wherever it lands, that does change some of the growth around the bees and how they're responding, because they need to prep for, let's call it, the winter in whatever area they find themselves. And usually they'll prep in, say, August. But if all of a sudden it stays warmer in August longer, they maybe haven't generated enough bees, worker bees, to last through the winter. So there's a numbers game going on there. And it is affected by the cycles and the solar cycles.
So this has been measured by scientists in general, like they know that they're going through the cycles, because it seems like although they do relate it to things like storms and not even temperatures, really, mainstream science seems to ignore just how relevant what the sun's doing is to what's going on here on Earth.
Oh, yeah. And then, well, from the beekeeper's perspective, I'll just be blunt on that. beekeepers aren't the most forthright sharing of information group out there. So, I mean, maybe they're busy doing other things, whatever the reason is, when they do these studies, and I've heard back from the numbers, and I'm friends with the largest beekeepers probably on the planet. And even then, you know, they have issues reporting back or even getting the information that whatever bee organization is asking for and doing that. So everything's really skewed, I'll put it that way. Because when I talk to them behind the scenes and or watch some of these different videos on YouTube talking about the collapses, and one of them was a buddy of mine, you know, he did the video. He's talking about, I think, 19,000 hives. Yeah, it's skewed numbers, and that losses aren't everywhere. It's just kind of varied. I mean, I can't exactly say East Coast more or West Coast, but there's just more to the story, I'll put it that way.
Is it the same, like all the big industrial beekeepers all across the country? Is it all the same kind of bee?
No, there's several types. There's what's called Carniolans. There's Italian bees. There's Russian bees I like to work with. There's lots of genetics or types of bees out there, and often they blend. And of course, like I mentioned, the California almond fields. So think central or northern California. It stays warmer than most states during the winter. So they literally send semi-trucks full of millions of beehives down there, and they all blend. So if you have the, because that's just a thing. So you'll get mixtures of genetics, which is also contributing to the losses now. Because when you have that many colonies in one area, and let's say one of them are sick or overwhelmed with viruses, I mean, you know where I'm going with that one. It's a thing. So it really affects them all.
Without sounding alarmist, just how bad is the colony collapse disorder right now in 2025 compared to how it's been in the past couple decades?
It's probably the worst. And I wouldn't say anybody should panic, but I hope beekeepers are doing research and opening up to ideas like we're talking about, adding things like shungite and colloidal silver and beneficial mushrooms to other things, because yes, it can compound, and we're watching it day by day on as we open up the hives, because it's just now spring in this area of Washington State, which is why I'm starting the two new hives tonight. But I'm going to get my first glance at how these beehives, and there's thousands of them, have sustained over the past several months. Yeah, huge losses. Probably in this area, half of the bees, you know, loosely, it's hard to put a number on, but about 50% of the colonies have died.
How much of that is translating to issues with farming?
Lots of issues with that. And actually where I'm at now, I'm on about where I'm going to put these new Shungai beehives. There's about at least 1,000 acres around us of farmland. Well, some of those farmlands do treat and spray chemicals and things, so that's always an issue. You can't really control that, so you try and keep at least the hive as treatment-free as you can, so when they come home, they'll have that Faraday cage of Shungai and then a good space to be in.
What's the range of a bee? I mean, because I go out and I see organic jars of honey, and I often wonder, you can't control what kind of plant the bee's on. I mean, is there like a known circle around a hive that a bee doesn't go further than?
No, they'll go as far as they need to. And that's the problem, because if we don't put things like bird baths or bee baths and put some rocks in there, anybody who's going to do this, so a bee can land on the rock in the middle of the water and have a little island, they'll need that. So if we don't, as humans, give them spaces like that, they'll go over 7 miles just to get a drink of water. And sometimes that's too far to make it back. And that's the thing. So they'll get stuck in our yard. And if they don't make it back before dark, they're usually not going to last the night. So it'd be beneficial for all of us to leave those dandelions alone in your yard, those yellow flowers. They're so medicinal. It's crazy. Every part of those plants can be used by people. So they're not weeds, and they are beneficial, just like clover fields for bees. Leave that stuff around so the bees don't have to travel so far. And then if you have the space, get a bird bath, like I mentioned, and help them out.
Well, we're coming up on the top of the hour here. Is there anything else in this particular subject matter we should get in before we close out?
Well, I wanted to ask them, so of the large-scale apiaries out there, like the industrial-size beekeepers, have any of those operations recognized what you're doing and implemented some of the things that you've come up with to help the bees?
They have, actually, down there in those almond fields of California. I drove down there myself with several pounds of shungite to distribute amongst thousands of hives, but thousands of hives is a drop in the bucket when you're talking tens of thousands of hives. So when we did that, and it wasn't feasible, and it was one of the largest, again, in the planet, this organization, to shungite paint every hive. I mean, just it's like for lots of reasons.
Too many, yeah.
Yeah. So they did as much as they could, you know, put some nuggets on the hives, and that had an effect, but it's a partial thing. So it's kind of like a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. you need a little bit more, but I get it. They couldn't do it. And then they turn their heads. Another truck pulls in from whichever state with how many hives that are now going to overwhelm that area. So it's a tough situation, I'll put it that way. But they are trying. They've used it, but they can't get it to the level where it's truly what I would call a Shanghai beehive. Although, and I don't remember the name, but the largest bee organization in India, the country India, has contacted me, among others too. They're trying to get me to go there to help them set up, because they're so open to it, to set up their, I'll just say, country's beehives into Shanghai beehives. So there are groups and individuals, or in this case, a whole country, willing to look at it. It's just getting all that stuff to line up.
Dude, you should fully do that. India does so many things in the vein of protecting nature. You see it, even though the main river in that country is something terrible.
Oh, I would love to go there. I actually got my patent. It's all, just to keep it real, a 3D money thing, you know, getting the funds to do it. And it's tough for everybody out there. And I would love to do it. I'm more than happy to. Yeah. And I've got the Shanghai. I told them they could have it for free because we've gifted that across the planet for almost 10 years now for Shanghai beehives. So that'd be interesting if we could.
So let me get one more question in before we break for the top of the hour. What do you feel is causing what's gone on in the last month or two here? Do you think it's the perfect storm of everything? Do you feel like it's EMF? Do you feel like it's the damn chem planes? What do you think the main culprit in this big, big die-off is?
It's an accumulation of all of that stuff you mentioned being heightened by, I don't know how else to term it, but more energies in our environment now, or space. There's been a shift of some kind happening, and it's heightening those other aspects. So it's making it, you know, they're having more of an effect on the bees. I'm not sure if that made too much sense, but I can see it energetically and when the bees get heightened. So I think they're having to adjust with all those chemical treatments and other factors we mentioned, but also to a change in just what I would call the frequency field around us. So it's everybody just modifying for that.
So you think it's more about the EMF spectrum?
Mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah, that's definitely because, and that's antagonizing the other aspects. So definitely the EMF spectrum is the worst culprit affecting the bees.
Well, I got to squeeze one more in. Do you feel like, you're familiar with electroculture and just like even something as simple as pounding a copper pole into the ground. Have you done any work with that kind of thing around the bees?
Absolutely. I actually make my own Shanghai copper electro rods with a little spiral on the end, and you can do just that. So I'll situate them such around a beehive or all the beehives, little short copper spirals that you can put in there with a Shanghai bead wound into them. And that in essence makes an energy grid above the ground and below. We don't visually think in our heads of a whole sphere around the hives, but that's how we should think. And yes, it definitely has an effect.
There's no doubt about that. As we close up, I'll mention a thing I did. I have about a 10-foot pole with a trellis on it to hold up grapes that my grandparents didn't plant them. Probably my parents planted them. They're a good 30 years old or longer. And I put up a spiral of wound copper wire stripped back all the way to the top, put a crystal on top, a little makeshift antenna, and I connected it to the trellis. For 2 years, the grape production went way down. And I theorized that there's so much energy coming from this thing that it overwhelmed the grapes. And so this year I've detached it from the trellis and I'm going to see what happens. But Derek, why don't you go ahead and tell folks where they can find you, your work, your videos, the Shungite, all of that. And again, on the sponsored page, there's a discount link to Derek and it's labeled Derek the Bee Guy from episode, I think it's 240 or something like that.
No, I appreciate that. And all this information we're talking about and so much more on Shanghai bees, and then again, obtaining your free sample for a beehive can be found at mysticalwares.com. And there's a whole page on there with the Shanghai science, more information on using it in your water. And I've even released a book that's available on there called Shanghai Unveiled with all this information.
Jason, anything more you want to get in?
So for hour two, there's something that we have on our list here that I'd really like to hear about. And that's, what role do bees play in what might be called the biofield of Earth? And are they interacting with Earth's frequency grid or natural energetic lattice in a measurable, intuitive way? That sounds incredibly interesting. So can we get into that in hour two?
Yeah, we'll have to bring that up in hour two. And right before I sign off here for a quick break, we come back for hour two. Have you seen the second sun in your part of the country, Derek, with your eyes?
Absolutely.
How regularly? Have you seen it recently?
No, probably a month or so when I last, because I'm just so busy every day, I don't get the opportunity. But when I was on my last Arizona trip, 100%, you could see it back there. And so, okay. So up and down the West Coast, I was traveling. So I saw it in Arizona and here in Washington.
Was it on the left side of the sun from your point of view? Yeah.
Absolutely left, 100%. I was going to mention in Quartzsite, Arizona, that when it was so apparent, and that's the middle of the desert for those that don't know, the chemtrail action out there, the way they blanketed to hide that was just, the visuals are different in the middle of the desert. I'll just put it that way. So they put some effort to hide things.
It seems to me where they know the angle gives you a clear shot, because I think in a lot of places at sunrise, you can get a glimpse, but depending on the angle you're coming in at, as soon as it comes off the horizon, it starts to tuck in behind. Today, I got my second day of filming this year. We had one sunny day since the 11th. This was it. The conditions were not great, but again, I could see evidence of the so-called second sun tucked in behind our sun, but it's hanging out to the left. And I've noticed that almost all the reports I've had show the other body on the left of our sun. But again, in many, many places, as it rises, there's separation between them. Anyhow, we're going to take a quick break. This has been Hour 1 of Episode 625. Hour 1 is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. Members get access to all the forums, comment sections. They can create top-level topics, and they can stream the two-hour film that now has 10 awards called Shoot the Moon. That covers all my past telescope work on chemtrails on the moon. It includes all of the lunar waves and the so-called discovery of the second sun. Lastly, there are still images that I've provided from my current solar work. And in some of them, if you look carefully, I've left evidence of the glow of that other sun behind our sun. And of course, members get exclusive access to the current solar work I'm doing. So the footage I just shot will be going up at some point for membership only. With that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back for hour two. And I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
enemies of knowing.